for episode 66. In order to finish off part 5 of this series, I'm pleased to bring you an interview with Gene Garnier, the son of Wild Bill. Take a listen. So I'm here with Gene Garnier, the son of Wild Bill. And, you know, I just wanted to learn more about your father. So why don't you tell us your father's story? You can start from wherever you want.
Well, I started out as a child with him, naturally.
Obviously.
Listen to me. This is my dad, so I don't – this is a long – this has been a long thing, and I'm amazed that people are still intrigued by this. I mean, I'm not saying it's bad, but it's amazing. It's almost 25 years.
Correct.
It is, yeah, 25 years. It'll be 25 years in September.
Yeah. Yeah. So why is that a bad thing?
No, it's not a bad thing. I'm amazed. You know, this is my father, and I can't believe how popular he became through this. It's like crazy. That's what I'm saying. Like he could have been at the Oscars last night walking on stage. That's how crazy this stuff is. He was at the AFI Awards. Did you ever see that one?
No, I didn't see that he was there. No.
He and Babe were surprise guests for Tom Hanks at the AFI Awards.
Okay, that makes sense.
That's on YouTube. You could see. When I was growing, I got a brother, Bill, and my name is Gene only because my dad, my father had 6 brothers, and he had a bet with his brother Gene and his other brother Augustus, or all you know, Uncle Gus, and him about what my name was going to be. So my father lost. My uncle Gene won, and I was named Gene.
And you're
my
the older brother.
Name is Bill. I'm the older brother. My other younger brother, Bill, is named after my dad.
Right.
So growing up with him, look, he had a wooden leg. It was wood. It was very heavy. It probably weighed about 30 pounds. It was made of maple. It only bent at the knee. And it didn't bend. Naturally, the foot did not bend. And he would have his pants on it when he took it off. He'd leave his pants hanging on it. And he was upstairs. He hopped downstairs, scared the hell out of him, coming down the steps, 4 steps at a time as he held onto the wall and bounced his way down. And even as a kid, I wonder why the steps never broke. But he would hop to the couch, sit down and say, get my leg, kid, me or my brother, and we go up and get it and bring it down to him. And it wasn't anything out of the ordinary because that's the way we grew up. You know, if you grew up yourself with your mom or dad, and they had one eye in the middle of their head, and they were looked like a cyclops. That would be normal to you,
right?
So that was normal. And he went to work every day. The amazing thing about his wooden leg, which made no sense to me at the time because I was a kid, it was held on by vacuum. He wore a stump sock, and on the top of the where the thigh would be on the leg, on there, where there was a metal valve, like a screwed on valve.
Mm-hmm.
And the stump sock was open at both ends, was probably about 2 foot long. He put the stump sock with powder over his leg, over his stump. And mm-hmm. when he put the leg on, he pulled the other end through the hole. And when he got the stump over, he pulled the stump sock off. And that's the way his leg was held on, which is absolutely amazing when I think about it now. As a kid, I didn't know nothing about no vacuum suction.
Right.
And he would go out and go to work and go everywhere with this leg on. So he went to work every day. And he did get a good job with the government when he got out of the service in an office. And he didn't like that. So he told him to get lost, and he wanted to do other stuff, building country. He wanted to do other things. And the government, when he got released in the service, they gave him, I think it was a 47 Pontiac. They gave him a car.
Oh,
automatic.
Wow.
He wasn't allowed to drive stick, which he did anyway, but he wasn't allowed to drive it.
Wait, remind me, did he lose his right or left leg?
He lost his right leg.
His right leg. So how do you drive without a right leg?
Well, what he would do, no, when he would drive, normally when he would drive, his left leg used the gas and the brake, which is we all do. We all use one foot. When he had his wooden leg on, he would put his wooden leg on the gas, and he could pull it back and forth with his stump.
Mm-hmm.
So he could release. Okay. Once it was on the gate, he couldn't feel it, but he could feel pulling it back and forth. And he would use his left leg for stick. Now, he wasn't allowed to drive stick, but he did anyway. What I mean is he didn't buy a stick car, but he could drive stick. And he gave the Pontiac to his father-in-law, my mother's father because he couldn't get a car. He needed a car. And my father was actually collecting for him. He was like a loan shark or something, my grandfather. So I'm thinking, my father's got one leg and he's going around collecting money from these hoodlums. This is what he did. He was like crazy, but he was a good guy. He never beat us or anything. I mean, he was really a pretty good guy. He was a good father, and he provided for us. He worked all the time. He worked in one job he had was funny. He worked in gypsum, which is plasterboard. You're familiar with plasterboard? You know?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. Okay. And he would come home. He looked like Casper. I mean, his whole face was full of white plaster. And I mean, they didn't have the stuff that they do today. You know, the mask, the breathing. He came home. I said, Dad, he scared the hell out of you. Another job he had, he was working. I think this is the last job maybe he had. He was working with his friend who was working for Terminix. They were doing contracts for Terminix, which is a termite company. And we used to kid him, Dad, don't get any termites in your wooden leg or you come home, it's going to get destroyed. That was like an inside joke. But that's what he did. He worked his whole life. And probably when he hit around 50, he started to get blood clots. And they took him to the hospital. He was getting a blood clot. He didn't start getting it, but he got a blood clot. And I remember going to the hospital. I was about 21 at the time. And they go to the hospital, and they had all these patches on his back to see what he was allergic to. And they really narrowed it down that he was allergic to this maple leg. So he, at that point, he dropped the leg, and he went to the Canadian crutches when he was in around 50.
Wow.
And he was strong as a knot because he had to walk. If you ever, you'll see pictures of him. His stumps on his crutch, and he would walk all over the place, and he just went on with life, and he had a fight with my mom, with my mom. They had a fight for him to get his full pension from the VA for like 5 years. It was terrible for him at that time.
What they weren't willing to give him.
He had 60% pension, lost a leg. Now he couldn't work. And he needed more money, so he should have got 100%. And I tell people this, and in fact, on one of the websites that we did, George and I did a podcast, they paid you by your rank. The government didn't. If you were a general, you didn't get the same pay as a private. You know what I'm saying?
So okay.
When he went AWOL in Holland to go back to, I mean, in England to go back to the company, they broke him from a sergeant to a private. So when he went back to the company and Winters was there, and they just put him back as a staff sergeant. So when he got out of the service, he was getting his pension as a private. Now, he didn't realize it. They didn't even – that nobody – it was different back. This is you're talking about in the 40s. I mean, they didn't nobody. So he got his pension as a private, and I mentioned that. And somebody said, oh, they give the same – no, they don't give the same pension to everybody. You have different ranks. You make different money. You know, if you're even in Israel, you're going to have the general retire and get $2, and the private gets $2. That doesn't work. Like they get more money.
Yeah, of course.
All right. Anyway, that's basically, I mean, what my dad was growing up. And then all of a sudden, my mom died in 97, and she was a big part of Easy Come because she would go to the reunions with my father, but they drove. My mother would not fly. I remember one reunion they had was at Buck Compton was hosting in California. Now, Philadelphia is 3,000 miles away from California. They drove.
Wow.
They drove there. Well, they were retired. My father liked to drive, and they took how many days it didn't matter, and they drove to – my dad would go – my dad ran –
No, but that was at the point when he was retired. But, you know, the reunion started not long after they got back, you know, in the 40s. So
– yeah, my father ran
– back then he was –
My father ran the reunions.
Yeah, I know.
Mm-hmm. But my mother didn't go in 47. What I'm saying is early was because she had me and my brother. We had a little
kid. Okay. All right.
You know, she went when we were out, we were married or whatever. We were out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that was in the 60s and the 70s. But she went to a ton of reunions with my dad. But most of the time he would go and he would take Babe, or Babe might not go and my father would go. But my father went to the reunions and ran the reunions. And he would get the hotel room, he would get the place, he would do all that stuff. But it never affected anything, you know. I knew the names of these people, but I didn't know them. I mean, it was never
did,
they were.
Did he talk about it, or he didn't really talk about
no,
it?
No, he didn't. No, I went to Vietnam. I came back. I said, Dad, what did you do in the war? He said, it's over, kid, forget about it. And that was the end of that conversation. That's it.
Oh, wow.
That he didn't that, that they didn't he didn't talk about anything. The only thing he ever told me, I don't know when I asked him about Bastogne. I said, "What's the deal with Bastogne?" Now remember, this is before the TV shows were on and this and that. And he said, "All right, kid," he said, "here it is. Here, listen to this." He said, "You're at the stadium at a football game." He said, "And you're in the middle of the field, you and you're playing, and you're in the game, you're one of the players." He said, "And everybody in the stands are Germans." That was his explanation for Bastogne. And I
Oh,
said, I got it. That made sense to what he said it. But that was the whole conversation. He did not talk about any of this stuff. When I got out of the serve, when I got out of high school, in ninth grade, I don't know how it is in Israel, in America, in ninth grade at that time, if you wanted to, in ninth grade, you had to pick a curriculum to go to high school. You had to pick a curriculum. You had general courses, commercial courses, whatever it was, and academic courses. Now,
okay.
the academic course I took, I was a good student. The academic course I took, because you were on that course, you could take a language. So they had Italian. I took Italian because I didn't speak Italian. I wanted to learn Italian. So I took that in ninth grade. And in 10th grade, I had a second year of Italian, but I also had chemistry, physics, trigonometry, all this nonsense that nobody ever in their right mind wants. But I had all that, and I graduated high school at 17. And my dad didn't have any money, really. He didn't make a lot of money. But I'll tell you, this is the way the world was different back then. He said to me, "Would you like to go to West Point or Annapolis?" Now, he had connections for me to go there.
Right.
And I told him, basically, get lost. I never heard of West Point or Annapolis. We're talking about 1970. We're talking about, I'm 17 years old, 1964. There's no internet. I live in Philadelphia. There's no internet. There's nothing. Who knew? I don't know about West Point or Annapolis. But today they would make an appointment for you. They would drive you there. They'd look about student loans. That's what people do today. In
Right.
the 60s, they didn't do that. I probably could have went to college for free because of his disability. But they didn't even research that. So that's what it is. And I got a job. And then I got drafted anyway. And then the rest is history. But
Wow.
that's just the way it is. That's the way it was. And I look back and I listen, I would have got out of West Point. Physically, I was fine. I was a paratrooper. I would have got out of West Point as a second lieutenant. I might have got Vietnam shot in the back of the head the first day there. I have no idea. So I don't knock on what happened, but I'm just telling you, these are things. Here's the whole conversation. Do you want to go to West Point? No. Okay, kid, get a job. That was the whole conversation. There was no, my mother didn't talk to me. Nobody talked to you. I'm not blaming them. That's just the way it was.
But I mean, you knew that he was in World War II, so the idea is,
I knew he was in World War II because his leg was missing.
right, obviously.
But then again, listen, everybody was in World War II,
Right, that's
basically.
true also.
I mean, in my generation, all the parents,
Right, everyone's parents
their
were.
mothers could have been working in factories. Everybody was involved somehow. I forget which guy said it. I met him. I'm trying to think of his name now, but Rod Stoll. He said that, and he said it on the film. He said that some people that couldn't get into work actually committed
Committed suicide.
suicide.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like when Japan attacked us. As you get there, you say, "What are you thinking? You think we're like going to roll over? Do we have enough guns here to start our own army just in America?" And I'm thinking to myself, "How crazy is that to attack us and think that we were going to just surrender?" That
Right.
just sounded crazy. I mean, if we go down, we're going to go down swinging, that's for sure. But that's
No,
and then when
I don't think they thought that the US would surrender. I think that what they thought was is that they would incapacitate as much as possible,
Yeah, well,
cause as much damage.
that's basically like, and then Hitler, how crazy is he declares war on us in the middle. Like, you have enough problems and you're so what they did is, and look, if you look at the industrial might that we had, with all these car manufacturers, and it just turned we were turning planes out and tanks out like nobody's business. And that's what we even supported Russia and we supported all of Europe at that juncture. But yeah, it's just a different world. And a Frank Januzzi, who played my dad, they said that he said to my father, he said, "Bill, they're never going to have another, group of people jump into the fray like you did in World War II." And my father said, "If we get attacked, we will." And when 9/11 came along, he told Frank, he said, "See, I was right because so many people joined the service
True.
at that time. We
Very
weren't
true.
going to attack anybody. It's just a different world." So for me, with him, because my mom died in 97, I was his plus one. Mm. I was always close to my dad, but I spent a lot of time with my dad because I was kind of, I can't, I'm not, this is the wrong word. I wasn't his protector. I was his accomplice or whatever, because he didn't need protecting. He didn't need protecting. He would shoot somebody. He was as crazy as he was in the war. He didn't take anything. And if he was, if he was threatened, he would attack. It doesn't matter if he was going to bite you. It didn't matter. He was going to, you had to kill him. And that's the way he was. But not like, he wasn't like that with me. Or he wasn't like that with
people. Right, no, obviously.
But you knew if you were with him, that whatever happened, he was in, no matter, even if he had to hit somebody with a crutch. Anyway, he was a good guy.
Well, so when did he start opening up more? I mean, you basically said he didn't really talk about anything that happened.
He didn't say anything. Except for
the other guys. But obviously, once Ambrose came around and started writing the book and getting information from the guys. And I mean, obviously, your father is predominantly, part of the miniseries. He himself, I'm not even talking about Frank, I'm talking about your father.
Everybody did not interview for that book, and some of these guys didn't want to interview. My father mm-hmm. My father had to talk Babe into interview.
My father really?
Talk Babe. Yeah, Babe didn't want to be bothered. A lot of these guys didn't want to be bothered, and amongst the children, the kids like myself, some of their parents who were in there were not interviewed at all because they couldn't fill the whole book up. I don't know how they picked out people. I don't know how it was interviewed about who they picked. I guess they try to get a cross section of who the people were. And I know my dad was one of the main characters, and Joe Toy, and I knew who Malarkey and Compton. I knew exactly who they were, but I don't know how that would turned out. They all went to New Orleans. What happened was, this is the my dad. They had a reunion in New Orleans. That was that was where the reunion was going to be, and there was a little blurb in the newspaper that the 101st Easy Company, whatever the blurb was, Airborne, was having a reunion there. So Stephen Ambrose saw it and sent a Marine over to talk to them, and they threw him out. I think my dad threw him out, told him to get lost. He wasn't part of the group or whatever. He just couldn't invade their privacy. When they were together, they were together. So anyway, they calmed it down. Stephen Ambrose straightened this out, and then he interviewed each person. And they said they interviewed you, Bob, and then they interviewed your friend, and corroborate a story. And, you said, hey, what happened here is this is what happened. Then they go to somebody else, and then they say the same thing. So that's how they kind of built the basis of the story, by interviewing people and getting the same people talk about when my father got wounded, how he, like Lipton said, his leg was shaking. I mean, people, they were right there, so they knew exactly what they remembered. My father had a great memory. My father had a great memory, and I asked him when I'm trying to think of the guy that they said died when he got shot.
Blythe.
Yeah, when Blythe got shot, I said to my father, where were you at? He said, I was there. It wasn't Johnny Morton. What happened was they're filming, so my father might be filming over here, so Johnny Morton's there. He said, I was right there. I was with him. Now, he was in first platoon, but my father... Babe told me when they always had first platoon would always go out on recon. First platoon, my father would go out with him. Johnny Martin and him were best of friends. They were the best of friends. Johnny Martin took him fishing in Mexico, and they did all kinds of stuff. My father would stay at his house with my mom in Arizona. They drove there. Johnny Martin lived up on a mountain. He was a big time builder. He was a great man, and my father was very close to a lot of these people in the company. Mm-hmm. He went to Luz's funeral. He drove up to Rhode Island, 6-7 hours away. And in his pocket, he had a pair of socks and underwear, a pair of underwear. And he went over to George's house. He told George's mom, here I am. And then she said, where's your bag? He said, in my pocket. He was like no maintenance. This guy was, I'm telling you, believe me, he wouldn't move in with nobody. He was just no maintenance. He was a terrific. He was easy. He was in Band of Brothers. I'll be 80 next week. Band of Brothers, when Band of Brothers came out in 2001, my father was, I guess, 78. So this whole time the Band of Brothers going, he's in his 80s.
Right.
He died almost, he was almost 91 when he died.
Right.
And he was 2 years before he passed away. That's when he couldn't carry himself on the crutches. So we got him, they came over the house, put all these things in for him. I did all kind of stuff, the doorbell, automatic lock on it, all kind of stuff. But he didn't care. He wasn't, Navy SEALs visit him at his house. His house was like, his name and phone number was in the book. People would visit him from Kansas City. I called him up one day. I said, Dad, you want me to bring anything there? What do you need? Not now, kid. I got a couple of broads here. I said, what are you talking about? He said, who? I said, who are you? He said, who are you? He didn't even know who the hell you are, you sweetie. He said, and they're from Kansas City. They just flew in or drove in from there to visit him. He had all kind of people visit him. Crazy.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just the way it was.
Okay. Now, what was his relationship or your relationship with Frank, you know, who played your father?
Well, I was friendly with Frank. We got along fine, and I mean, as friendly as you could be or as close as you could be. This guy's an actor. He lives in Florida, and he's in California. He still emails me once in a while. We talk, but, he's got another life going on all by himself. You know,
Bandit Buzz,
he's 25 years old.
Right.
And the last time I saw him was when they had thing they had in New Orleans 3 years ago, 2 years ago?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was in the podium, and I was with Frank, and all these guys, I call them kids, but they're all really nice people. All of them are really nice, and my father was close with all of them, and him and Babe went to England with Tom Hanks they were assistant in doing this film. You know, mm-hmm. making it true. My father said, "Hey, Tom," he said, "they're not dirty enough," and he made them dirtier, you know, that kind of stuff. But that was that. And my dad was, I traveled there. I didn't go to England with him. I could have. But I can't believe how much this guy could move around and go all over the place.
Right. Wow.
He was crazy. He was a crazy guy. But my mom wasn't around. He was just busy and he didn't mind flying. And HBO, I can't say enough of HBO, how good they were, but all these veterans. They were mm-hmm. just magnificent. My father didn't make any money. These people make no money.
Right.
That wasn't important. It's how they treated them. HBO would pick my dad up in a limo, bring him to the airport in a limo. When he went inside, they had a sign, you know, with his name and first class on the plane. I mean, they couldn't treat them any nicer. HBO wow. treated these guys like nobody's business.
Yeah,
that's it.
But on the one hand, you said he didn't really like talking about everything that happened in the war. But on the other hand, here he got this newfound fame, you know, being a part of the story of Band of Brothers.
Yeah, that's because he opened up.
How did you deal with that? And so he did start opening up, right?
No, he opened up. Listen, he opened up to everybody but me and my family.
Okay.
I would be sitting in his living room while someone was interviewing him. Here's something I never knew this, and people even said, how come you don't know this? They're like, how would I know this? When I was growing up, my father had, I think, 4 tattoos, a parachute, this and that. One of the tattoos was a gravestone, and on it said Dunk. So I saw that, and I thought Dunk meaning like someone is buried. That's what I thought.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So this guy is interviewing my dad, and he's asking me, he said, hey, explain it. He's explain this one, explain that one. And he said, what's this Dunk? And my father said, that's my brother Henry's nickname, Dunk, because he dunked everything in coffee. And Henry was killed in Italy, Casino Italy.
Right. Yeah.
So who knew that? You think when you're a kid, I don't care what his tattoos are. Somebody says, you don't know what your father's tattoos. I was like 12, 15, 16 years old. What do I care about his tattoos?
Right.
You know what I mean? I got my own tattoos. I can't. But my point being is I never asked him about it, but he never told me about it. He didn't say, hey, this is my brother. This is. Because people will say to me and they don't think, did you ever meet your brother, cousin, Uncle Henry? I said, listen, I didn't even know my father when their Uncle Henry died. I mean, I wasn't even born.
Exactly.
Of course, they say, was that really like your father in the series? Now, all the veterans say it was like my dad. They said they called him Wild Bill because winners called him him and Spears natural born killers. He would kill some. He didn't think anything of killing people. Mm-hmm. And when he came out of the service, he had that mindset through his whole life. He wasn't afraid of anything. Even with one leg, he was not afraid. The way he was.
Right. And I mean, your parents met after the war, right?
No. My mother was his girlfriend. I just thought about this recently. My mom was born in 26. I was born in 46.
Okay.
So my birthday is in March next week. I'll be 80. And my mom's in April, in August. And my mother was 19 years old when I was born. I didn't think of that until I got older. And I thought, well, he's only 19 years old. No, that was his girlfriend. My mom was his girlfriend, Franny. And that was it. Then they got married. And, you know, he had one leg when they got married. So, I mean, you got to think back. How does her parents feel? How does his parents feel? I don't know. I never knew my dad's mom. She died. She was alive when I was born, but I don't remember. But I remember his father, and I remember my mom's father and mother. And that was all.
Well,
there was no talking about the war. Nobody talked about the war. Nobody did. Yeah. Over.
Right. And at some point, did you start going to the reunions with him towards the end?
No. Who wants to go to a World War II reunion? I'm 21, 22 years old. No, you're talking about at the end.
No, I'm talking about later on even. You know, once,
no, I know. The only time
once,
I
once your mother wasn't around and he was starting to open up, you know, at that point.
No, he didn't open up at all then. He just went to the reunions. And I'm not taking off a week or two from work to go to a World War II reunion.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. I got my own family. Where are you going? Well, we're right. going to go to Washington okay. State. Nobody went. And then what do I don't even know these people. Plus, look at the generation gap here. They want to be by themselves and cut up and do this. They don't want kids there. George Luz went to a few reunions. I think the Gordons went to a few reunions. And my father told one story. He was with, and I never met him, and I wish I would have met him, Popeye.
Okay.
Him and my father were at a restaurant. And on the table was this big pepper thing. So Popeye picks it up. And hollers grenade because it's like a German grenade. And he throws it and it goes through a window. Oh my God, they got thrown out. Him and my father get thrown out. But that's just the way they were. Different people. Yeah, they didn't want me. He wouldn't want me to go to a reunion with him anyway.
Right.
Then I didn't want to go. I mean, I could have went. Hey, I want to go to a reunion. Okay, kid. Just keep your mouth shut.
Right.
That's it. If you think about it, I mean, like I said, it's like, you know, I don't know how old you are, but it's like if your mom was involved in a sewing class and you say, you know, you want to come with us for 2 weeks, get lost. I mean, like there's something. And even
I wouldn't necessarily say sewing class. I understand what you're saying.
But nobody, I didn't care about World War II when I was 16, 17 years old, but it didn't mean anything to me. Nobody talked about World War II then.
Right.
It's after when it really sunk in. You know, I look at, like, now I watch the History Channel. I'm learning a lot about World War II with the Marines. I mean, I'm learning a lot about it because it's so interesting. And what a terrible time all these people had, not just Easy Company, but all the companies, all the Marines, the people on the ships that get sunk. I mean, how terrible was all this stuff?
Yeah.
It was terrible.
It's true.
That was a tough time. You know, your ship gets sunk with a kamikaze and just craziness. And you're thinking, God, how could anybody survive this? You read my father's book. The one thing, and I read his book. And, you know, you read as much as you can about him. That's always you get a lot of information about. But he's reading the book, and they were getting water in their helmets. And I don't know if you ever read his book, but the water in the helmets. And Babe says to my dad, he said, Bill, there's like brains in this water. What should we do? My father says, keep quiet, kid, and bring it back. I mean, that was just the stuff that they went through was just sound insane. Bastogne, they're freezing. If you see the weather. You know, Bastogne in the Band of Brothers series looks pretty cold, but it looks pretty mild. If you watch the film of Bastogne, the wind is like 30, 40 miles an hour, and it's blowing snow. And these guys have no socks. They're sitting in foxhole. What a terrible time it had to be.
Wow. That's
I
just
mean, you look at the
amazing.
film, it's the coldest, right to this day,
Yeah.
that was the coldest winter in Belgium, best known, in 1944.
Yeah.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, there
For
it is.
sure. For sure.
What else you
Now,
got?
did you think that your father was happy with how he was portrayed in the miniseries?
He said he was. He said he was. He said they did a good job. My father's not a critical person. He never talked down to people. The only thing he did is if you bothered him and he told you to get out of his way, then you saw a different person. When he had his heart attack, my wife and I took him here home at our house because he was by himself. I mean, we couldn't, you know, he didn't. My friend called me up and said, "Your father fell off a chair where he has his breakfast at every morning." And he says he didn't feel well and this and that. So I go down. I was driving. I was in Jersey. I was coming back from Jersey, and I said, "I'll come right over." So I go over his house. My friend Steve is there with my dad. And my father was the kind of person that if he didn't want to do something, he wasn't going to do it. So he said, "Yeah." He said, "I'm all right, kid." He said, "I just got a little ups my stomach, a little upset with the sausage saber." I said that, and he was a little dizzy. I said, "You can't stay in your house dizzy. It's one leg." And I
Right.
said, "You have to come home with me." When he said, "Okay, kid," that wasn't like him. Normally, he would tell me, "Get lost, hit the pike, and get the hell out." But he came home with me, and when he came home with me, in the car, he's sitting in the car, and he fell asleep, which he doesn't do. He's
Oh,
always
wow.
awake. He's sitting in the car, you know, passenger seat, and he falls asleep. And I get him home, and he comes in my house. My wife's here with the summers, air conditioner's on. He's watching the guy cutting the lawn out back, and my wife and I. We said, "Let's get him a go buy him a chair," because he was in a recliner chair. He couldn't sit in the recliner chair on it. So we went out to buy him a chair, and I got my daughter to come over and sit with him, and she did. And when we came home, he was inside now, and he was in the air conditioning. He was sleeping. So my wife's a daughter, my daughter's a daughter. My daughter's a nurse. They're both nurses, and they took him to the hospital. And when he took him to the hospital, the nurse is asking him a question: "When's the last time we were your doctor?" He said, "I seen Doc Rowe. That's the last time he saw the doctor." And he had a heart attack in the hospital. Fortunately, he was in the hospital. And then he came home here, and he was here for 6 or 7 months. And people say, "How was he?" I said, "That was like rehabbing a male lion. He was good when he first came in. Who was he didn't have his teeth. As he got more, he wanted to go home. You know what I mean? He was growling more. You know what I mean? His mane was low." And then I said, "All right, Dad, let's set a date. I want you to go home." So he was here in, say, June, and he went home in January. And he was back in the fold. He couldn't, he wouldn't live with us. He was independent. He didn't want to live with anybody. And all that, he would have died up here in these houses in the suburbs. He was in Philly in his house. People visit him. Police would come over and visit him. Navy SEALs would come over and visit him. Boys from Kansas City would come over and visit him. He had all kind of people visit him. He liked it. He liked it. He didn't mind it.
Wow.
And that was his story.
Yeah, that's great. All right, well, thank you very much for sharing stories about your father. It's really appreciated.
Not a problem.